It's the most all-star studded challenge ever. And this time, it's every competitor for themselves.
Best challenge ever!
The Challenge All-Stars. New season now streaming on Paramount Plus. Go to ParamountPlus.com to try it free. Terms apply.
Freaking first cut. Golly!
Welcome to the First Cut Podcast. I'm Rick Gaiman, and this is your mega preview pod for this week's Mayakoba Golf Classic. Joining me to break it all down, Kyle Porter is here. KP, what up, big guy?
Not much. The office is slowly transitioning into what I want it to be. So I still need a desktop. I'm operating. I've got one of those like stand sit desks, but there's no tabletop. So it's just like this frame that goes up and down. My wife calls it my Inspector Gadget desk because it just moves all over. It's not a good scene, but we're getting there.
You have a stand, sit, frame is what
yes,
you have.
Yes, pretty much.
I love it. It's looking good. You're making progress over there. How was the Thanksgiving break? What were you up to?
Yeah, it was great. Got to spend a little time with family, you know, in kind of a more condensed way, traveled a little, but it was great because I love it on these holidays where you can do the Thanksgiving family thing, but you also get some of your own family time. And so we got 2 days with family and then 2 days on our own, which was fantastic. Got to, it's nice that there's no golf going on. I mean, there was on Friday.
How dare you say that?
Well, you know, we're back at it. We've got good field this week, but yeah, it was nice to get some downtime after the Masters.
You know what was crazy? So we literally just got together with my parents, like in their backyard, and despite there being four of us, there was still food for 40. I think, which is like,
yes,
is that the rule? Like, you still have to cook for 40?
That's exactly what happened with us, and I was like, is there a small army that I don't know about that's coming through the, you know, Hennessy, Oklahoma? Like, what's going on here?
I love it. And then the Friday, you know, put a dent in the couch, recover, get blessed with Chuck and Lefty going out and laying the smackdown on Steph Curry and Peyton Manning. What did you think of that whole match part three?
Well, producer Jacob and I were just talking about it, but after about the third or fourth hole, I think we were both like, well, Rick nailed this, because I guess I was stunned about two things. One, and you saw this coming, I didn't. And so I concede that. I apologize. Steph was bad. Like, he wasn't very good. And that's not to say, I mean, he shot a 71 in a Corn Ferry event. That's legit. Yeah. Like, that's big time. But he also shot an 87 in a Corn Ferry event, which is more akin to how he played in the event on Friday. He was just, you know, he wasn't like, he didn't embarrass himself. He just was not very good. And then Phil, well, okay. So the second thing was that Barkley was not that bad.
He was very serviceable, especially around the greens, right? Him getting the opportunity to like lag the first putt or whatever was so valuable to them, just making a bunch of pars, taking advantage of a couple of the par fives. Like, he was serviceable around the greens and he hit enough fairways.
Well, and I think the part that really helped them win holes was the fact that he would just hit the, like, and we talked about this, and we talked about all this stuff, and I still pick Steph and Peyton, but he would hit a fairway and Phil would still be farther out, but his approach shot from farther out is going to be at least equivalent to what Peyton and Steph are doing. Mm-hmm. And when that doesn't happen, when Barkley has to hit the approach shot, they would have been unable to make a lot of pars. And so pars could have won holes for Steph and Peyton. But because Barkley was hitting fairways, Steph and Peyton just, they couldn't win any holes because they didn't make any birdies. And that led to just what was kind of a rout. And Barkley was talking trash on by like the eighth hole. It was kind of sick.
There was a moment on, like, I don't know, it might have been seven, where Phil and Charles had won like three or four in a row. And Steph flubs his chip greenside. And now they're chipping for like a five. And Phil and Barkley just give it to him there.
Yeah.
Where they still have to get up and down from where they are, which is no, like, no small task. And like, I was like, oh my God, they're going to blow this. And this is where Steph and Peyton are going to come back, but they still end up winning the hole. And it just slams it. I mean, it was over seven holes in.
Phil is the most condescending match play player of all time. I mean, it's atrocious. Like, you know, he's wanted, and maybe he has done stuff like that in the Ryder Cup before, but dude, his whole deal is, it's a little much for me at times. I think he's better when he can pick his spots, like somewhere between like he is with Tiger and like he is with Barkley is kind of what I want.
Yeah.
But listen, he's going to be a lunatic as a Ryder Cup captain. Like he's going to be, I don't know. He might not sleep for like four straight days. He's just going to be pounding coffee and it's going to be a circus. It's going to be awesome, but it's going to be a circus.
When Phil was just like, Charles, come here, come stand halfway between our putt here. Come here. Let me show you this. Okay. Tucson's over there. I'm like, yeah. Charles, like, dude, just tell me, like, is it like two cups out? Like, just point your putter where you want me to aim this and I'll take it from there.
I think Barkley was kind of low key getting annoyed. Like,
yes. I don't think it was that low key. He was, but they were winning, so it was all good.
Well, and the two things that really just killed me both came from NBA players. One was Andre Iguodala saying plus one after every bad Steph Curry shot, pointing out his handicap. Yeah. Which, by the way, if Steph's getting only two aside from Phil, sign me up for Phil, wrong, yeah. Especially on TV. And then the other was Shaq telling Barkley, you can't even read words. How are you going to read green? That was like, the phrase in and of itself, but the way he said it was so funny.
Yeah. Yeah. If Shaq would have been in his ear all day, it might've been a different story, but just surviving one hole there, the six, they were able to get away with it, but so, dude, so good.
That the whole like, NBA and TNT, that hole, it was a sixth hole or fifth hole.
Sixth, I think. Yeah. The par three.
It was so entertaining. I mean, you walk away. I think it was, Brian Anderson. Was he the main, yes. main broadcaster yeah. was saying, and you can see why they've won a bunch of awards. And he was kind of joking, but it was true. Like it was unreal to see them all interact. And it was just, it was fun. I really enjoyed that. I was watching it with my headphones on at my in-laws' house. And at one point I think it was the Shaq statement. I just started laughing out loud and I took my headphones off like 10 minutes later. And my wife was like, what are you laughing about? I was like, it's kind of hard to explain, but
yeah, you gotta be there. Yeah, that was a lot of fun. Good partnership that those NBA on TNT guys have. Also good partnership here, brand new partnership, PGA Tour and the European Tour announce a quote strategic alliance, KP. So the small bullet points that we have on this, the PGA Tour is going to get a minority stake in the European Tour. They're going to work together on commercial opportunities. That's always good. Sharing the global media rights and just more cooperation, whether it's player pool or prize pools, whether it's scheduling, whether it's opportunities, just working together. To me, this is this just fends off the PGL, right? I mean, this is just one step closer to like a global tour that we have here?
Yeah, I think that, you know, I read a lot about it. A lot of guys that cover golf in Europe are really good on this. Obviously, they cover the European Tour more. Eamon Lynch of Golf Week had a really good article. There's a ton of interesting stuff out there. It was the timing was weird because I mean, I don't know about you. I didn't read or do a ton over Thanksgiving. And it was just like, wait a second. Am I reading this right? Like, did this actually happen? It's something that we've talked about or talked around a lot. And then when it happens, you're like, wait, what? Why is this happening to the timing? I still go back to, it feels like there's kind of maybe more to the story there. Maybe it's as simple as kind of what everybody is writing of it is fending off the Premier Golf League. I wish that part, and I don't know how you feel about this. Part of me wishes it was like all or nothing, right? Like where it was, okay, either be separate or be together. It's this weird kind of like dance that they're doing where it's like, are they doing this? Are they not doing it? It's a little in between. And I don't really know how that's going to play out over the next 5 or 10 years.
Yeah, and obviously the details are kind of vague, and I think once we see it in action, this will either make a lot more sense, or we're not even, or like there's a chance things business continues as usual, and we just are like, oh yeah, the PGA Tour has like a small stake in the European Tour, right? Like, I don't know what this looks like in practice.
I think the weird part of this for me, and different people have talked about this. I heard Brendan and Andy talking about it on the Shotgun Start, but what it means for the Ryder Cup. And I think people don't really know the entities that are in charge of the Ryder Cup, which is the PGA of America, which runs PGA Championship and the Ryder Cup, and then the European Tour, which runs the European Tour. And for the PGA Tour, which is sort of a, I wouldn't call it a rival of the PGA of America, but there, you know, there's some egos on both sides there.
Sure.
To be partnered with the European Tour, but like, that they're, the PGA Tour is essentially on the opposite side of the country that they're residing in, which is a, it's kind of a strange thing. So I don't know that that means anything in the short term, because again, this doesn't seem to be a full-fledged, like they're merging,
yeah,
but it could mean something, you know, 12, 15, 20 years from now.
Are Gary Player's wins going to become PGA Tour wins at some point? Are we just going to start recognizing all of these as
well? We gotta get some sort of currency, like some sort of exchange rate on the Sunshine Tour, because we've got all sorts of Sunshine Tour, Asian Tour. I mean, you know, he's traveled more miles than anyone in human history.
I know. I've heard that 1,000 times. I think. Yeah. Never lets us forget it, does he?
It is. You know, I think Rory was the one that talked about this. Like, I think it is good for people to understand, casual American golf fans to understand how global the game is.
Yeah.
That Brooks Koepka was on the Challenge Tour for a while, and that was a helpful, legit, you know, thing. And just to see other golf courses, you know, we get so. We get in this rut of going to what feels like Bridgestone every week. That's not true. And I'm not saying that every course the PGA Tour goes to is bad, but to see a course in Ireland, to see a course in Scotland, to see a course in England, like think about last year at Royal Melbourne, and credit PGA Tour for going to Royal Melbourne for the President's Cup. Like that was freaking awesome. Like that was so much fun to watch. And I hope that is, you know, who knows if it will be, but I hope that that's part of this in the years to come.
I do as well. And I also hope that the PGA Tour can take a little bit of creativity from the European Tour. I feel like the European Tour is, and maybe it's out of necessity, that they innovate a little bit more. You get different styles, whether it's speed golf or the shootout they just ran a couple of weeks ago. And maybe it's because they have to be a little bit innovative because, you know, they don't have all of the massive sponsorships that the PGA Tour does. And the PGA Tour is much more traditional, right? I'm kind of hoping there's at least an injection of innovation, of new, let's try some new things. What's the worst that can happen? We don't do it again next year. Like that's what I'm hoping that at least the tour gets out of this partnership.
Do you think that in terms of formatting mostly, like in terms of the way tournaments are formatted?
Yeah. I mean, like we see it. I mean, yeah, I was like the thing my brain was like the social media, like European Tour social media is like the best thing in the world. And like the things that they do with 500 shots for a hole in one.
Oh, I would rather watch that than like half the PGA Tour tournaments.
That's what I'm saying. So like, that's good. But yes, I'm also talking about the formats, right? Like they've done men's and women's like partnership ones.
Yeah,
before.
That's cool.
Speed golf. They've done like, I just think they at least try things more often is yes. Mostly in formatting.
I mean, I think it's hard because you can't blame the PGA Tour for, I mean, think about like the biggest company in any industry. They're going to be more protective than they are proactive. And so I agree. I'm totally with you. It's just, it's hard because when one bigger entity is purchasing, they're not purchasing, but if they were to completely merge with a smaller entity, it's hard for me to see them going in the direction of the smaller entity, even though I would desire that. And I think the product would be probably better in the long term. It's just, there's this fear of what you risk whenever you do that. And I think that a lot of times drives not just PGA Tour, but any big company in any industry.
Yeah. If it ain't broke, don't fix it. Let me bring Mark Immelman into this conversation. Mark, can you hear me loud and clear? All good?
Yeah, I got you guys. How are you doing?
We're doing well. How was your Thanksgiving?
It was nice. My wife was abroad with her ailing father, and so my daughters and I were down in Orlando with a family, and it was relaxing, and we played a little golf, and we went to the Kennedy Space Center, which was cool. So I was involved in golf, got away from golf, now back home and back in the grind, man.
All right. Well, we're going to bring you right in on the PGA Tour, European Tour Strategic Alliance. Kyle and I have just been spending the last couple of minutes bouncing off what this could look like. And we're kind of anywhere from business as usual to one step closer to a global tour. Like, we're just trying to figure out what this might look like in practice. And we want to get your initial thoughts on it.
Well, that thing, global tour, I mean, it's sort of been the taboo word for a while, from when Greg Norman floated the idea many moons ago to, you know, the recent foray here earlier this last year, which threw the cat amongst the pigeons. But as far as I'm concerned, I mean, I've been in discussions with a number of the minor tours, including the European tour, about the PGA Tour amalgamating. And we saw it happen in China with great success. We saw it happen in Latino America and Canada as well, became the Mackenzie Tour, now the PGA Tour of Canada. And so the PGA Tour is the strongest brand in the game. I mean, with respect to the European Tour, they know it too. And with the way the COVID pandemic has whipped just global economies and really has leveled a pretty hefty blow on the European Tour, I think it was probably, I don't want to use the term necessity because I don't know the business ins and outs of this thing, but the PGA Tour in a position of great leverage. And I feel like they can bring exposure, and they can bring, you know, much needed funds to the European Tour. And then to that, if you think about it, I mean, the PGA Tour largely, you know, with the World Golf Championships events, this is kind of an extension of that, if you will. So I think it's a little business as usual, but I think it's a huge shot in the arm for the European Tour. And then the European Tour, the guys over there are very creative, and they might bring something to the PGA Tour. So I'm kind of excited. I mean, I'm hearing from bosses. Everyone's trying to figure out the schedule for next year and stuff now. And so for me being in the broadcast element of stuff, heck, man, I wouldn't mind a trip to Malaysia or something like that. Well, you know?
Yeah, I think you're right. I think it is exciting. I mean, I don't, and maybe it doesn't play out like that. Who knows how it's going to play out? But I think if you love golf and if you love golf globally, then I think it's, I think there's a lot of reason to be excited about it. I do wonder about the financial side, and I'm glad Mark brought this up because, you know, Keith Pelley keeps saying, who's the European Tour CEO, keeps saying, we're financially strong. And people are kind of reporting, no, you're not. And the thing that's intriguing the most to me from a financial standpoint is the Ryder Cup. And it's not like a huge secret that the Ryder Cup in Europe, when it's in Europe, kind of buoys the European Tour for the next 3 years or whatever. Not to say that other things don't come into play, but that's like that's a huge financial windfall. And we haven't missed one of those yet. Like the pandemic it's affected a lot of things. It hasn't specifically affected a European Tour Ryder Cup in Europe. And so I almost tend to believe what Keith Pelley is saying, at least from a financial standpoint, that they're maybe in a little bit better position than people are giving them credit for. And again, that might be wrong. The details I don't know the details, so that might be incorrect. But it is true that we haven't yet missed a European Tour Ryder Cup. So I don't know. That was just something that I was thinking about.
No, that's a good shout. But bearing in mind the Ryder Cup in Rome, which I am so jacked for, just as an aside, it's been pushed back a year now because the edition was pushed back a year. And so funds deferred, a different deal to funds in hand. And so I don't know the ins and outs of the thing. I was marginally surprised when I saw the release. And then the more I thought about it and the more I talked to my father, I was in Orlando and he's been the commissioner of the South African tour for 5-6 years or whatever he was. And, you know, everyone, the Australian guys, everyone wants to be involved with the tour, and the European tour were doing a great job, and they have done a fantastic job, and they've gone from strength to strength over recent seasons. But, you know, 2020 has just been odd, man. And this is just more of the same as far as I'm concerned.
Yeah, we need a first cut meetup 2023 in Rome for the Ryder Cup. How much wine
I've got to be honest. A dear friend of mine, David Brooks, I'm letting the cat out the bag here. His son, Ben, nearly came and played golf for us this year, starting in August. And David and his wife were over here, and we were sitting around my dinner table just chatting. And he's the commercial director for the Ryder Cup for the European Tour. And I was like, hey, listen, big guy, Rome is kind of enterprising, you know. And, so and then this whole thing happened. Then COVID, you know, came down, and then his son, Ben, didn't come over. And there was just so much on the go. So it's so strange. And so I think everyone, businesses are just like you and me and everyone listening to this, you know, we're unsure of the future. And so I think this alliance is what it's called. I think this is a smart move for all parties.
All right. We're going to keep a close eye on it, obviously. And we'll see as it, it'll, you know, this is like turning a, what do they call it? Freight train, turning a, what are those big ships called? Where you, they host. What is this ship called? This battleships? Is a, battleship. This, wow. This, oh my God.
Really good radio there, Rick.
Wait, Rick, I still want you to, you made this quip. I wanted to remember this the other day about rolling pennies in front of a steamroller. What how's it going?
Picking up nickels in front of a steamroller.
That's it, yeah.
I remember that. I have some good ones. I have some bad ones. So we'll keep an eye on this whole strategic alliance moving forward. But we've got PGA Tour action down in Mexico this week. And despite a Dustin Johnson withdrawal, this is still a very strong field. KP, that DJWD was predictable, right?
The most predictable. It should have been the only thing more predictable was a 5-time major winner beating 2 amateurs in a, even though I didn't predict it. yeah. I mean, I was kind of surprised that he was going to play to begin with. Right. I mean, I don't know. Like and I guess the reason I say that is this, it's like a weird time because there's nothing before it. There's nothing really after it. It's just kind of this one-off deal that there's no rhythm to it. There's nothing really to kind of prepare for. You can kind of just use the Masters and lead into, you know, that's like the end of it. Like I saw Rory's not playing for 2 months. That's what I would expect of like a top 5 guy. So I was kind of, I was a little bit surprised that he was in the field to begin with.
To that, I don't know the exact rules in the player handbook, but I know the players are required to play in a new event every so often. I don't know what the time frame is on this, so don't quote me on it. But there may have been some of that at play with Dustin saying, "Well, I haven't been to Mexico. You know, this is, you know, the I don't want to call it the off season because it's not really, but you know, I may as well go and play. I've got a little mojo going on. Why not win again?" But to Kyle's point, you know, that Masters victory changes stuff, and I'm sure he's living a little large right now.
There was a tweet. I wish I had the exact tweet that in the last like 6 months, he's made $28 million or something.
Well, somebody, I think it was Lou Brown on Twitter said that since Brooks kind of went at DJ on Saturday night at the PGA, he's won like 3 tournaments and like 21 mil or so and the Masters. And he's like, you always leave the quiet ones alone, which I thought was great because DJ's, you know, when we've talked about this, DJ is, he's always super nice and he's laid back. He does his own thing, doesn't bother anybody. And then, you know, Brooksy riled him up and here we are.
Here we are is for sure. Justin Thomas is here. Brooks Koepka, the aforementioned BK, is here. Tony Finau, Abraham Anser, Victor Hovland, Brendan Todd, your defending champion. But here's the storyline I want to get into, gentlemen, because I think this is noteworthy. You know, it's going to be the end of 2020 here before we know it, which is going to lock in kind of like that first wave of invites, Mark, to the Masters, right? If you're in the top 50 in the official world golf rankings at the end of the year, there's your invite. Obviously, there's going to be ways to get in later, but Ricky Fowler, probably the biggest name sitting right on that number, Mark. He's number 49 in the world as we embark on Mayakoba. He's got a little bit of work to do if he wants to assure himself a trip down Magnolia Lane in April.
Yeah. And fortunately for Ricky, he's played well at this place before. And there were some semblances at Augusta National a little while back that the game was running into form and some trust was being built in the golf swing, which for me was the big deal. You know, making an adjustment is one thing, applying it in practice is another, and then applying this thing under pressure when it means something is entirely another deal. So So it was good for me to see him playing well. And yeah, the time to make hay is now, because, you know, each one of these deadlines that goes by is one deadline closer. And as you guys know, I mean, I was the ultimate procrastinator for when it came to studying for examinations and stuff. You know, that push gets a little hairy as you get down, come down the stretch. And if Ricky's struggling for a master's invitation, you know, in March, I don't know when the last one is. Kyle will know, but that's not the kind of pressure you want to play with. So you'd rather lock this thing up now, enjoy Christmas, and then get busy on the West Coast next year.
Yeah, I have it here. So March 29th would be the, you have to be in the top 50 by March 29th, or of course, a PGA Tour victory somewhere in there will get you in as well. KP, kind of a bigger picture on Ricky Fowler. I want to get your level of concern here. So I'm talking about year end official world golf rankings. 2017 finished the year 7th in the world. 2018, he finished 11th. 2019, he finished 23rd. We're almost at the end of 2020. He's sitting at 49th. This is not a great trajectory for Ricky Fowler. What's our concern here? Is it just a weird 2020 year and he's going through swing changes and we don't care about it?
Well, you know, we did this with Spieth, right? Where it was like, oh, he's, you know, tweaking his swing. And you hear that and you're like, oh, okay, he's, you know, great player. He'll figure it out. And then he doesn't for 6 months and you're like, what's going on here? And why were you doing this to begin with when you were a top 15? It's easy to say that on this end of it, because I think on the front end, you'd be like, oh, well, to get in the top three, this is what you need, or whatever, you know, maybe that was kind of in his head. So it's very easy for me to criticize where we're sitting now. But I don't know. Ricky's somebody who, he's older than you probably think that he is. I think he's 31 or something like that, which is not old, but there's so many. I mean, think about how many guys have come in and are just like Matthew Wolf's better than him. Colin Morikawa is better than him. Will Zalatoris right now is better than him. I don't know if he is overall a better player. Ricky's had a great career, but at some point you start to say, okay, like, what's this going to look like? He's not the young guy with potential anymore. Like, his career just is what it is. And so I think that's the part that you kind of got to figure this out pretty soon, because you're going to look up and be 35, 36 and not have that much time left.
Yeah, it is weird, Mark. We always, for how long we've been like, oh, Ricky Fowler, he's a young gun, up and comer. Yeah, he's played the Masters 10 times. So, like, I mean, he's been around. I think Kyle's, you know, and we kind of said this about, I feel like we said this about Jason Day before the 2020 season starts. I feel like 2021 will be a real defining year for Ricky Fowler, right?
Yeah, there's no doubt. And to build on that a little bit, you know, I heard it, Paul Azinger said it best, you know, in the Southern wisdom that he possesses. He's like, you know, when I was playing well, it felt like I'd never play badly. Mm-hmm. And when I was playing badly, it just felt like I'd never play well. And golf is a fickle mistress. And when the form starts going wrong, you know, it's one thing, it's very difficult to maintain the focus and keep the patience and not panic. And you referenced Spieth. I mean, I've seen elements of panic watching him on the golf course before. And as soon as you start to add panic to a situation, that's when it gets just, you know, so hard to deal with, not just physically, but mentally and emotionally as well. And for Ricky, it's an alarming trend. And the game is going in the right direction. But the truth of it is the confidence has got to be waning. And it's hard to compete against the world's best when you've got low confidence. I don't care who you are, because, you know, you can, yes, the one thing about a swing change, and I know this, I've been on the teaching end of a few of these, you know, you research it, you look to the potential ramifications, but there's an element of hope that's involved. And you hope this is going to work out. But no one really knows what the future holds, to get back to a previous conversation. So, yes, Fowler and John Tillery, they know they're making worthwhile moves, but they don't know what tomorrow brings. So as a player, you're always getting on the tee there going, well, it's going better. How's it going to be under pressure today? And then when you're playing with your foot kind of halfway on the break, I'm trying to compete against DJ and McIlroy and JT and all this crowd, you know, that is next to impossible. So for me, I'm a little concerned right now. And my wish is for Ricky not to sort of go down the Jordan Spieth path for a little while. But, you know, that all being said, the one thing about these guys is, you don't stumble your way on the PGA Tour, and you certainly don't stumble your way to a Players Championship or a major championship or whatever. So the pedigree is there. And sometimes, like Zinger said, you know, you're just one swing away from good golf again. And I hope for Ricky's case, that is indeed the case.
Wait, did Ricky win a major and we didn't know about it?
No, I was talking about Spieth. Ricky won the Players. I was making the analogy there.
I think that, you know, one case that I made to a couple friends the other day was that, and this is probably unfair to Ricky because I think Ricky has actually had kind of an underrated career. He's won a lot all over the world. He's won the Players. He's won a Scottish Open. He's been really consistent at majors. And I think it's easy to say, oh, he hadn't won a major. Well, yeah, John Rahm hasn't won a major. Like, they're freaking hard to win, you know? And, you know, DJ had one more major than Ricky did as of 30 days ago. So I don't, that argument's a little empty to me, but the case that I was making is I wonder if Ricky looks at Colin Morikawa and sees like, man, that's what things, you know, could have been or should have been. This kid from California wins a major or has a great amateur career, has a great college career, comes out, wins a major early on. Ricky was really good early on in his career. He almost won the, help me out, Mark, the Fries, I think, early on. Mm-hmm. And, you know, Morikawa, I think, has work to do to have Ricky's career still, even though he has a PGA championship. But my point is that somebody like that's 10 years younger. And I wonder how much Ricky looks back. I think he's pretty content with his life, but I do wonder how much he looks at the young guys and think, man, like, I wish I would have, you know, just taken advantage of it back when I was that age.
And there's just one more thing, you know, we've talked about the swing changes and stuff, but I saw Ricky Fowler at the Masters with a completely different putter in his hand, and not just a different putter, a completely different style of putter as well.
Yeah.
And I would have bet my mortgage on that dude from inside 15 feet any day of the week. But all of a sudden, if he has one of the great putters on the PGA Tour coming out with a weapon change, that speaks to that element of the game too. Battling with unsurety of where the golf ball's going, and then you're not entirely sure whether you're going to make that 5, 6, 7 footer, that thing that's likely to keep the round afloat when you've missed a green because your swing's not there. That is a tough place to be when you're competing, man.
Yeah.
And he told us on this very podcast that thing's not going away anytime soon. So we better get used to seeing that big old putter in his bag. Gentlemen, we've got matchups to get to. We've got best bets. We've got picks to win, one and done, all that good stuff. But first, we're going to take a quick break and we're going to hear a word from our partners.
Hey, it's Kaylee Cuoco for Priceline. Ready to go to your happy place for a happy price? Well, why didn't you say so? Just download the Priceline app right now and save up to 60% on hotels. So whether it's Cousin Kevin's Kazoo Concert in Kansas City, go Kevin! Or Becky's Bachelorette Bash in Bermuda, you never have to miss a trip ever again. So download the Priceline app today. Your savings are waiting.
Go to your happy place for a happy price. Go to your happy price, Priceline.
Get ready for the greatest roast of all time. The Roast of Tom Brady. A Netflix live event happening May 5th. Hosted by Kevin Hart. The 7-time world champion gets his cleats held to the fire by famous friends and frenemies on an unforgettable night where everything is fair game. Tune in on May 5th at 5 p.m. Pacific time for The Roast of Tom Brady. Live only on Netflix.
And we're back. Matchups. Let's jump right into this. Abraham Answer -115 versus Harris English, also -115. Kyle, we'll start with you. Who do you like here?
I was not paying attention. Man, I like both of these guys a lot. I freaking love Answer. I've followed him around at Augusta a little bit, and he's just like, you watch him and you're like, is he that good? And then he just scores. He just performs. Like, I don't know. I think we've seen him get on heaters before. We saw it this time last year at the President's Cup, and he rode that momentum into 2020. I'll go with Abraham Answer here.
He's a gamer. Absolute gamer. Shows up all the big fields, plays well. This place does not require distance. Give me Answer as well. I almost called him Mark Answer. Abraham Answer or Harris English?
Well, look, I'm wearing my international team gear. You see there me over here? Okay, so I so badly want to pull for Abraham in Mexico. I mean, that would be a sensational story. And I've got the utmost respect for his game, and he's a great guy. I'm a fan. But I just have a sense about Harris English. The guy, just the way he's hitting the golf ball right now, the way he puts it, he's going back to a place he's won before. I'm going Harris English in this one.
The next matchup could not be more different. Ben on, worst putter on the planet. Denny McCarthy, best putter on the planet. Kyle, take your pick. Pick your poison, my friend.
I'm always going to go the ball striker here. I'll go with Benny on.
Me too. I'm such a sucker. I'll take Benny on as well. Mark, your choice.
So you guys made the statement about the ball striker. Where do you think I'm going with this one? I'll have Denny. Thank you very much.
There it is. All right. We'll get Greg's picks later. We'll have him phone those in. Brooks Koepka, a sizable favorite, -135 over Daniel Berger, +105. Mark, we've not seen Daniel Berger since the Zozo Championship. And now he's going up against a big dog in Brooks Koepka. Who do you like?
Yeah, but Daniel Berger, anytime you put him on any sort of seaside kind of grass, Bermuda grass, that sort of stuff, he just becomes a different animal. And there were arguments made on this podcast at one stage here during the lockdown that Daniel Berger was comfortably the best player in the world, and he was certainly playing the best. Remember that stuff?
It was. I think he was atop Kyle's power ranks at
Exactly. Yeah, I think Kyle might have had him in the top 10 ever. But just jokes aside, I think I'm going with Berger here, even though he's had time off. He's got the kind of technique that lends itself to just coming back. You know, there's nothing really to worry about. He had shape. He's very accurate off the tee, and he putts great.
I want a clip of Kyle looking into the camera and shaking his head like he's Jim Halpert. Like, I didn't top 10 all time. That was such a good reaction. He just let it roll. He just let it roll right off. KP, I'll take Daniel Berger here. He's just so great all around. Who do you like?
First of all, do I need to explain a power ranking to you people?
you do need to explain it to Twitter, because Twitter killed you for that power rank.
That was insane. He had risen to like the number 11 player in the world from like 100, and people were like, no. And I'm like, yeah, he's finished in the top 10 in like his last 7 events. I don't know what you want me to do. I'm gonna go Berger, but it's less about Berger than it is. I can't do the Brooks thing. I don't know. If this was a major, maybe I'd feel different. I know he played well, at least on the weekend at the Houston Open, but I'm not in on Brooks right now.
Jenna's been keeping us up to date on what he's been doing down in Mexico. It looks like tequila and chocolate earlier today. So I'm not sure if Brooks is practicing, grinding down the putting greens, or just enjoying himself. Either way, I hope he has a good time. Corey Connors, -130 versus Willie Z, Will Zalatoris, +100. KP, we'll just go back to you on this.
Couple of great ball strikers here. I'll go with Connor's been playing pretty well. Really? I what's the number? Who's the underdog?
Zalatoris.
I'll go with Zalatoris then. Even though Connor's has been really solid.
Connor's has been dynamite for his last 4 starts, Mark. It's either him or Will Zalatoris.
There's a little scar tissue here for me, because I believe I picked Connors over Zalatoris in a previous matchup we had down the road. Well, maybe it wasn't Connors, but it was someone like that. And Will stung me. So I'm going to go with Zalatoris over you. I'm going to turn my tide.
I'll make it a clean sweep and stay on brand with Willie Z. I don't know how we got a second Harris English matchup, gentlemen, but we have producer Jacob loving Harris English this week. This time he's up against Justin Thomas, the favorite. So JT is -190 versus Harris English at +150. So KP, this is a big gap. You can get a lot of value if you like Mr. English.
Yeah, this is annoying because I'm picking JT to win, so I guess I have to pick him here, but there's way too much value with Harris English, right? Like he's the third biggest favorite in this field, right? Isn't he like 16 to 1 or 15 to 1, something like that? Yeah. He's been awesome over the last, I think he's got 4 top 10s in his last 8 starts, including at the RSM, including a US Open. Like, he's been unbelievable. But I'll go with JT just because I'm picking him to win.
I'm also going with JT, but Mark, I got to tell you, I'm a little worried about it because, and we've talked about it on this pod, where like when he misses off the tee, he misses kind of really bad. And I'm worried that you got to be in the fairway around El Chameleon. The first time I got to drop that in the pod today.
I was hoping to get it in before you. That's one of the coolest names of golf courses we play. You're right about that. But the one thing JT does is he goes to that little fairway finder of his, and he can flat the ball down. He's the complete package. And he's got a long way to go to achieve Kyle's goal for how many, 25 wins this decade or whatever it is.
Yep. He's
got a lot of time left as well.
That's true. Yeah. Well, is he going to play like 15, 16 events a year? You know, we'll multiply that by 10. Anyhow, I'm going with Harris after all of that. I think Harris English is a really good pick here this week, and he's playing great.
I love it. Time for picks. Let's start with sleepers. I'll go first. Brendan Todd, your defending champion. I think he's like 50, 55 to 1, thanks to our friends over at William Hill. He's been dealing with that toe injury. Greg and I kind of hashed this out a bit on Monday's show. Obviously a great fit for him. Got the extra week off his feet. I'm going back to B. Todd as my sleeper. KP, who is your sleeper?
What's Brendan Todd's number?
I think he's 55 to 1.
55?
He is. I can get it right now. He was 50 to 1 this morning. He's 45 to 1 right now on William Hill.
Okay. I'm going to go with John Huh.
He's playing on a medical exemption, I believe, right? He's played well. Did I just get a better reaction than that?
I thought I just knocked you guys out. I thought my screen went froze. He's 100 to 1. He's got two top 20s in his last three starts, and nobody else is going to pick him. So I'll go with John Huh.
But how does this work? Because they've got a thing on William Hill where it's top South Korean player, and he's not even listed over there.
I think he's American.
Okay. Well, forgive me then. My mistake.
Isn't he?
He was born in, well, he was born in New York, New York.
Oh, okay. Strike me from the record.
In 1990. Oh, these kids.
Yeah, that's tough to swallow.
Forgive me, John. I'm sorry, buddy.
Mark, your sleeper has a great track record around here.
And he's been playing beautifully over the last little bit too, Emiliano and Grillo. You know, he's really starting to tee to green. I think the stroke average around this place is well under 70, and he's finished in the top 15 a bunch and played well here the last time we were out at Sea Island. He was part of the mix, I remember, over the weekend there. So I think he continues the trend. So I'm going with Grillo there as a sleeper.
And we're going to give you a pass on John Huh. He was born in New York, grew up in South Korea, and then moved back after like 14 years. So that's the confusion here. Mm-hmm. Top 10 locks, gentlemen. I'm going to go with Daniel Berger. I think that the markets have a bit disrespected him just because we haven't seen him play. When you don't see a guy play for 4 or 5 weeks, he kind of goes overlooked. I wasn't on board with Kyle's power rankings a couple of months ago, but I was closer than a lot of others. So I like Daniel Berger a lot. KP, your top 10 lock.
My top 10 lock is, I can't remember who I wrote. I think it was Harris English. Yeah, it was Harris English. I think I had Finau, but I ended up going with Harris English. Think about guys who 12 months ago were in a different, like a much different place than they are right now. You think about Brendan Todd, you think about Harris English. Harris English is number 33 in the world this time last year. I think he was like 400 in the world. I mean, he's had such a great last 12 months. Sebastian Munoz is another guy I'd throw in there. So I'm going to go with him as my top 10 lock.
Mark, your top 10 lock is my pick to win, so preach on it for us.
Abraham, the way he's playing right now, Answer, is just awesome. You know, he's really reliable off the tee. He's got a dynamic. He's got a killer short game. I mean, the guy spins it with a wedge around the green as much as anyone I've seen, and he's got a lot of swagger about him. My only concern, and I got to tell you, I don't know if you've seen his caddy, Dale is a riot. I got to be honest with you. And I found him on Instagram the other day. And he does a daily hot dog review, which is worth your while. You've got to go and see this. And so Dale is a rat. I'm just not so sure he's going to find hot dogs down in the Mayakoba area, but I'm sure he will. So, that aside, I think Abraham this week in Mexico, I have a sense he's going to go well.
He's the highest ranked player in the world without a win on either the PGA Tour or the European Tour. That stops right now. He wins in Mayakoba. I love it. Playing well, great history, and it's a good fit for him. KP, you're, where are we at? Pick to win. Kyle, yes, pick to win.
JT, give it to me. Number three.
This will be three with then what, 22 more to go in the next 9 years.
That's right. So three a year.
Not even if he wins this one, he could do 2.5 a year.
Yeah.
It's over. If he went, Mark, if he wins this one, it's over.
If he wins this one, I might go Vince Carter.
Wait a second. I must have misunderstood the bet. So he's going to win 25 times in 10 years, right?
Yeah. Yeah. Okay. It's going to be lights out with this one.
So basically, he's going to be Dustin Johnson in the next 9 3/4 years, right?
Every year for 10 years. Yeah. Okay.
I think he is. I think he's this generation's Dustin Johnson.
Okay.
Mark, your pick to win the Mayakoba Golf Classic.
Well, if JT wants to help Kyle to achieving this ludicrous bet, he's going to have to beat Harris English. The way English is playing, he's played well here before. He plays well here consistently, and he's won. And I'm always a believer in guys who are playing well. You know, there is the horses for courses argument, and he's got that going for him. But if you want to see who's likely to play well the next week, go and look at the leaderboard from the week prior. And Harris has been playing awesome. And he played well down in Sea Island, too, for a long while. So I think Harris does it again.
Boys, sorry to butt in. I got to run here. Have a good one.
Take it easy, bud.
See ya.
See ya.
I will also loop that in for you, Mark, is your one and done lean for the moment. I'm looking towards Victor Hovland, who has been very sneaky, piling up these top 15 finishes all over. His one win has come on those pesky Paspalum greens like we're going to see down in Playa del Carmen this week. So I'm leaning towards Victor Hovland.
I want to just add, because I found out in the last time I was on the show that I'd picked Xander twice in our league. So I penalized myself by sitting out this week, but this is really stinging, I've got to tell you, because I have a high suspicion about English. And to spend points on this because of self-penalization is going to be hard.
In your defense, we have just been submitting picks via text to Jacob with like, and then Jacob finally dropped on us like, here's the spreadsheet of all the picks. And I was like, oh, that would have been nice to have a couple of weeks ago.
I need to see that thing now.
Very, very honest of you, Mark, who's going to he's going to sit out here, but would have gone with Harris English. Time for best bets. And Mark, you've chosen one that I really like. It's a group bet. What is it?
Oh, well, you know me, I normally pick the country bets, but I've been listening to you guys talk about these groups and stuff, and I'm just scrolling up the page here to see them. There's a group there, tournament group E.
Yes.
Dudes Berger, who I like, Munoz, who's playing great, Alex Noren, Adam Long, and Ches Reavie. Mm-hmm. But Joaquin Niemann, before he had to sit out with COVID-19, the guy was just a banshee. And he always is. And he's, again, it's an idiosyncratic swing that's all his own. But it never seems very much that he gets very off. And he can hit the golf ball knee-high to a grasshopper. And when you get some winds going on and you playing in a place where you have to hit it accurately, you flight the golf ball down. So I think this is playing right into his wheelhouse. Yes, he's probably a little rusty because he hasn't played some, but still, you got to beat like, what's that, 6 guys in that group? So at plus 333, I think is a good bet.
Yeah, and he looked like he was starting to shake off the rust. His worst round at the RSM was Thursday. His best round was Sunday. That's pretty nice to see, you know, shake off the rust a little bit, come in and close on a Sunday. I've got a top 10 bet here. It's Russell Knox to finish inside the top 10 at 6-1 on my money. He's been inconsistent, but he pops when he plays well. He's had a good run of success around Mayakoba. And I don't think it's any surprise that Kyle departs the pod, Mark, right before he drops into the chat that one of his best bets is Brooks Koepka to miss the cut. He didn't even want to have to defend it. He just drops it in the chat and gets the heck out of here.
He's making friends all over the place, isn't he? It's Gary Player and it's Brooks Koepka. I mean, how many bulletin boards is Kyle Porter on around the nation? It was my question.
Yeah, a ton. Absolutely. Okay, that'll do it, Mark. We're going round by round this week. So there's plenty of content for the final PGA Tour event of the calendar year. I'm looking forward to this one. We didn't even get into this. This course to me is one of the most visually appealing courses that we go to, right? It's beautiful out there.
It really is. And you've got those mangroves around there and the place that the players stay. I've never been, but everyone I've spoken to, they're like, it's awesome. The players, you get transported in these little, basically boats around the mangroves around to your hotel room and such. And of course there's Mexican food and then margaritas. I mean, what more do you want?
Can't beat it. That's Mark Immelman, who you can find on Twitter at @Mark_Immelman. Kyle Porter, who joined us, you can find at @KylePorterCBS. You can find me at @RickRunGood. This has been The First Cut, and we'll catch you next time.
Hello, everyone. It's Mike Richards here. You might have seen me on CBS working on their Champions League coverage over the last couple of years. I wanted to tell you about an exciting new podcast that I've been working on. It's called The Rest Is Football. It's me, alongside Gary Lineker and Alan Shearer, two absolute legends of the game. The show combines topical debate from the world of soccer along with outrageous tales from our careers. And I mean outrageous. Just search The Rest Is Football wherever you get your podcasts. All the best from Big Meats.